From KALW News in San Francisco, this is Cross Currents, context, culture, and connection from around the Bay Area.
Richmond.
Sunset.
Oakland, California.
Concord, California.
Fairfield.
Foothill.
Coming up, how do you create sounds for a world that doesn't exist?
You have to be open to different things and think beyond the specifics of whatever something would literally sound like, because oftentimes that's not the most interesting or the most dramatic.
Then we find out what it takes to recreate the real world in sound.
Not too many people get the excuse to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to the Ninth Ward to record Urban Chickens.
And the story behind this week's audiograph sound is revealed. Ready, set, bowl. This is Cross Currents. When we're watching a movie or checking out our favorite TV show, we're very aware of what we're seeing on the screen. But what you hear going on in those scenes is just as important, and some would argue even more important than what you see. Take the world of animation, for instance. The Bay Area is home to one of the world's most famous animated film production companies, Pixar. They've taken us into the worlds of rebellious toys.
I am Buzz Lightyear. I come in peace.
You are a child's plaything!
Struggling superheroes.
Honey, where's my super suit?
Why do you need to know?
Lonely old men.
Hi, Mr. Frederickson. Please let me in.
No.
Wandering fish.
Hey, Mr. Grumpy Gills. When life gets you down, you know what you gotta do?
I don't wanna know what you gotta do.
Just keep swimming. Just keep swimming.
And a brave redhead.
I am Merida, and I'll be shooting for my own hands.
But the worlds they create depend greatly on the sounds that exist there. For that step, Pixar sends their animated films to Skywalker Ranch in Marin. KALW reporters Seth Samuel and Alyssa Kapnick went to Skywalker to meet one of their sound engineers and to see what it means to make an imagined world come alive.
This is a clip from Pixar's Monsters University.
Wait. Let's pause just for a second and explain a little bit of what's going on here.
Yeah, I agree. So first of all, Monsters University tells a story about monsters attending a university for monsters.
And a particularly nerdy monster, Mike Wazowski, wants to be accepted by the cooler students at school. So he and his friends take on an athletic challenge.
The toxicity challenge. And one part of it is running as fast as they can, while other monsters throw what are called glow urchins at them. They're a sort of spiky jellyfish.
When a glow urchin hits a monster, his skin instantly swells into a comically giant wound.
Okay, so let's hear that scene again. What you're hearing are the monsters getting hit by glow urchins as they race each other.
The great thing about animation is that there's no sound to begin with. That's very freeing in that it's all built from the ground up.
Tom Myers is one of the designers behind all of the sounds you just heard in that clip.
We met up with him at his office, a tiny studio in a corner of the sprawling Skywalker Ranch up in Marin.
Oh, man, I can't believe we're here. Is that an Oscar?
That is not an Oscar. That is it's actually C-3PO.
I am C-3PO, human-cyborg relations.
When you're here at this company for 20-plus years, and I've been here over 20 years, they give you one of those.
Tom Myers might not have an Oscar yet, but he's been nominated 3 times and has worked on over 70 films.
In his studio, there's a pretty large movie screen, speakers, and a single microphone. Tom's also got a computer and an old analog synthesizer called a synclavier.
That's a combination of a couple of throat singers, or actually one throat singer performing in a couple of different ways. So I go and record something, and then I will sample it into the synclavier. You can virtually sample anything into it.
As he creates and manipulates sounds for each scene, the film projects onto the movie screen.
When you watch the scene for the first time, what do you do first?
Cry openly, weep openly. No, I you look at it and go, oh my God, how will we ever get to a spot where we have it all together? But so your mind starts to think about certain things. Well, what will that sound like? And how should that work together? And how do we make each sound distinctive? Because they all happen very fast.
So back to that clip from Monsters University, Tom and his team had to create sounds for most of that. Everything but the voices and the sounds that the Foley artists make.
Like footsteps or opening and closing doors.
For everything else, the team has to invent the sounds of that world. In this scene, the sounds have to get across both the danger and the comedy of what's happening.
Wow. Oh my gosh.
This last character who gets hit, he gets hit three times and expands, and then they shoot one into his mouth and his whole body expands. So obviously that one needs to be sort of bigger and needs to be kind of the payoff, the fattest, body inflation. So you try and vary the frequency so you can build a rhythm and kind of reach a climax with it.
And the sound has to change throughout the scene. Otherwise, it wouldn't seem realistic and it would bore the audience.
It flies in, it stings, and then there's an inflation. So there are three aspects to each one of those things that come in, and there are hundreds of them that fly by. So you have to figure out, well, how do we get that idea of 1, 2, 3 across? And then with so many different ones, how do you do it so it doesn't just become, a mess of sound?
Could you tell us specifically how you made the glow urchin flying through the air and hitting a body?
Okay.
What are we actually hearing?
Let's see. Well, the by is a tone, sort of a synthesized tone that I put through a Doppler program. Pitched it down a little bit. I think I added a little sort of bacon frying with it to give it some texture.
And this isn't a fancy industry term.
It's literally the sound of bacon in a pan.
To give it that kind of sizzly texture.
And beyond the pitched up tone and the bacon frying, there's also the sound of two Hot Wheels cars banging into each other.
We don't have that original recording, but this is what we think it might sound like.
And at one point, they used the sound of someone hitting a giant empty water bottle. So why, you may ask, do they go to all this trouble? Why not just throw something urchin-like through the air and record that?
Tom says it gets tricky to record in the real world because you can't necessarily control that sound. In order to explain this to us, he tells us a story that's infamous at Skywalker Ranch.
Randy Tom, who's the director of sound design at Skywalker, once went to collect sounds from a nuclear facility.
And it didn't really work out, or it was very sort of diffuse and mushy, and the sound was not what he expected it to be. But as he was leaving, there was a water cooler that had a specific kind of hum and bloop when he went by it.
So he recorded that, the sound of the water cooler blooping. And that's what he ended up using to represent the nuclear facility.
Celebrated sound designer Walter Murch once said, sound kind of sneaks in the side door. The design doesn't have to knock you over. It's there to enhance your experience, to keep you inside the story and the moment.
The emotional component is at least as important as the literal component. You have to be open to different things and think beyond the specifics of whatever something would literally sound like, because oftentimes that's not the most interesting or the most dramatic.
For example, there's a scene toward the end of Monsters University where Mike Wazowski, that nerdy monster, has to roar. It's got to be a really particular kind of roar, too, because Mike's a pretty little guy.
It had to be good but not great. I actually did use the vocal. I did use sort of my own vocal and pitched it so it had some body. It's big and scary, but not quite so big and scary.
Ah! Tom had to hit just the right balance so that the audience would believe that that roar came out of a monster's mouth instead of his own.
In a way, that's what he's doing through the entire film. And it's the ultimate test of a good sound designer. To make an animated world exist, Tom has to make the audience forget that he does.
Oh my gosh, what was that?
Let's get out of here. I'm a losing captain!
Alex, it's Samuel!
Seth Samuel and Alyssa Kapnick are both fine. Pixar's next feature film, Inside Out, isn't due for release until 2015, but you can watch all of the other Pixar features, including Monsters University, on DVD. For more information, go to our website, klw.org, click on Cross Currents. You're listening to Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Today's show is all about the sounds of our world, the ones we imagine and the ones that are real. That's something that makes a lot of sense when you think about radio. After all, there's not really anything to see here. For all you know, I could have a giant pineapple on my head right now. In the end, dear listener, it doesn't really matter at all what I look like. But if things don't sound right, we notice. Even if we don't realize what's wrong, our ears and our brains prick up. Take Bart, for example. Most of us who ride recognize this sound. But what if Hollywood made a movie about San Francisco and used this sound for a scene at a BART station? We'd know it was wrong. And for those of us who live here, it would ruin the authenticity of the scene.
Sound is tricky. When you get sound right, nobody notices. When you get sound wrong, it's very, very wrong.
That's Jen Ralston. She's a sound editor for film and television with credits on everything from The Big Lebowski to Hedwig and the Angry Inch to David Simon's HBO series The Wire and Tremé. While a lot of her work involves creating sounds to match the action we see on the screen, her work also sends her out into the field to make sure all the sonic details of a place are as realistic as possible. KALW's Julie Kane met up with Ralston at her home in San Francisco to talk about the work she did to bring post-Katrina New Orleans alive in the show Tremé.
So the show is about how New Orleans gets back on its feet after this large storm, this large event, changes the entire city. It changes who lives there, who can afford to live there, what's left, what jobs there are, and who returns, who can return, who does return, what they do. So the city sounds completely different after Katrina. So, the wildlife changed, the domestic animal life changed, the number of people in general dropped drastically, of course. Less car traffic, less pedestrian traffic. There were no air conditioners, which meant that just the general noise floor of the city was lower. You didn't have that kind of rumble and buzz, the street lights, the everything was quieter. And one thing that some people told me was that as people were returning to the city, if it was a neighborhood where there was only one or two houses where people returned, the people in those houses would make it a point to be as loud as possible. Like they were almost trying to assert that there is life in this block, and if you're looking for something to steal or if you're looking to make trouble, there are people here. And so everybody had a dog that was very jumpy and would bark at anything that moved because there were very little things moving. And everybody who was home had a generator and a radio playing or a TV or music. They were just making as much noise as possible to sort of like kind of assert their territory.
Oh,
I had to spend a lot of time down there. I had to do a lot of research. I had to interview a lot of people who were there before and some during, but mostly after, right after the storm. In the course of one of the interviews, I think it was a woman who came back early to help round up stray animals. And so those volunteers were helpful in particular because they were paying attention to how things sounded. They were listening for cats and dogs, and they were aware of, you know, where there would be rats or, you know, and something else that would draw the animals or be dangerous to them, they were aware of. So they were walking around a lot and they were listening. And one of them told me that there were urban roosters on the levee. Not too many people get the excuse to wake up at 3 o'clock in the morning and go to the Ninth Ward to record to record anything. It's my job. I've got to do this. I have to, you know, take my recorder and go look for urban chickens. The reason why Tremé was important to me is because I was in New York City during 9/11. And being a sound editor, working in sound, what I noticed the most was how different things sounded after 9/11. People didn't honk their horns for, it felt like a month. People weren't yelling on the street. You know, you didn't just yell across the street to somebody else. It was very somber. And it sounded somber. The same amount of people, you know, more or less, and especially just in the neighborhoods that weren't directly affected, you know. But they behaved differently, and it affected how the city sounded. And noticing that, which affected realistically, what can we say, 5% of the geography of New York City, Katrina was an event that affected something like 30 or 40% of New Orleans. So that's a much bigger effect, and a lot more people would have noticed it. As our ratings can attest, we didn't make the show for people living outside of New Orleans. The show was, it was very much an insider show, and, you know, verisimilitude was the watchword. We wanted to get everything as right for them as possible. This is the way David Simon works. He was a journalist. So even though he's writing fiction now, it's fiction based in reality. But the thing that's really important to him is making it sound right for the people who are actually there. So that is why I took the time to interview so many people that were there. And at first they didn't really understand some of them, my questions. Like when I said, what did New Orleans sound like after Katrina? It sounds sort of like a rubbernecking question. Like, you know, did you see any dead bodies? You know, and I wasn't asking that. I was asking, what did the city sound like? And they said, I don't know what you mean. And I said, well, when I was in New York City on September 12th, I noticed this. You know, I noticed there were much fewer airplanes, and the only airplanes that were allowed to fly overhead were military. And they sound very different than commercial jets. You know, once I got that ball rolling, they were able to say, oh yeah, there weren't any air conditioners. Oh, that, you know, there were a lot of dogs, but they didn't bark a lot. But there were these animals, and this one guy had a goat that got loose, and it was over there. And they were able to tell me what the city sounded like after Katrina, when they didn't think that it sounded any different the first time I asked them. And that stuff, you know, because sound is tricky. When you get sound right, nobody notices. When you get sound wrong, it's very, very wrong. And, you know, if we had put the time and care into telling the story and showing the visuals of New Orleans, even if all of that was accurate, but there were kids playing in a playground in the background when schools weren't open for like 8 months after that, or if, you know, there were a bunch of songbirds in the spring or crickets at night, people watching in San Francisco wouldn't notice, but people in New Orleans would be, oh, this show, that, you know, this is Hollywood crap. They don't know what we did, what happened to us. They don't understand. Whereas now, you know, most of the people who do comment on the sound of the show. They're like, wow, you got the helicopters right. We had a lot of helicopters in the first season. And they're like, yeah, that's what I remember. It was a lot of helicopters.
That was sound editor Jen Ralston. She's now working at Skywalker Sound and is getting ready to direct her own web series called BFF. This is Cross Currents. I'm Hanat Baba. Now it's time for Audiograph, our weekly series that uses sound to take you all over the Bay Area, to places you know well and to places you might never have been. All week long on KALW, we've been playing you this sound. It's the sound of a place I've driven by every day for years. Cars fill the parking lot till late night on weeknights, and I've always wondered who was in there and what it sounds like inside. So one day I ventured in, and the sound of cracking and cheering greeted me at the door.
My name is Mukul Kumar, and this is Cricket Strike Zone in Union City, batting cages. There's plenty of cricket in Bay Area, and then people play all over the Bay. So they need some place to practice. This is where they can come and practice their skills. They can improve on batting, bowling, or fielding skills.
My name is Arya Venkatesh. I'm 10. When I was about 3 years old, I watched the Cricket World Cup. And then I was like, wow, these players are awesome. And then I played cricket in the house with a plastic bat and a plastic ball. And then ever since then, I wanted to play cricket. And I love it.
What do you think of all the gear you get to wear? Now, those are some serious knee pads right there.
They're just called pads.
They are all the way from, like, your thigh all the way down to your shoe.
Well, actually, to protect your thigh, there's something called a thigh pad. And these are to protect your shins. The gloves help you grip the bat well, and they also protect your fingers.
And this...
Yeah, the helmet.
And the helmet looks like an umpire helmet.
These are the immigrants that come from, you know, all over the place. They come from England, South Africa, Australia, New Zealand, India, Pakistan, Sri Lanka, Bangladesh. I came from India some 10 years back, and I have been playing cricket all my life. This is something that I love. It's picking up really fast. I wouldn't be surprised if in the next 5 years we will start seeing national level or, you know, state level cricket championships played all over America.
All right, our winner who guessed the sound right is Vinod Iyengar from Mountain View. Congratulations, you're getting a KALW t-shirt. For the rest of you, there will be a new sound next week. Here's a sneak peek.
East Bay, they call it. Just about the furthest you can get on East Conococcus County.
So, if you think you know what that was and where we recorded it, give us a call. Our number is 415-264-7106. That's 415-264-7106. That's it for today's Cross Currents. The team includes Leela Day, Maya DePaola Hanica, Audrey Dilling, Laura Flynn, Nina Gensler-Debs, Chris Hoff, Ashley Ann Krigbaum, Christina Loring, Ryan Miller, Julia Scott, Stephen Short, and Todd Whitney. Today's show was produced by Julie Kane and engineered by Seth Samuel. Our senior producer is Martina Castro. Ben Trefney is our executive editor. Holly Kernan is our news director. And because of your support, we can proudly say we are listener-supported public radio. This is San Francisco's newest professional a cappella choir called Capella SF. Ragnar Bolin is conducting the music, and he heads the new choir. Capella SF has its debut concert on Saturday night at St. Mary's Cathedral in San Francisco. Music starts at 7:30. For Cross Currents, I'm Hanat Baba.